1 year ago today, music filled St. Peter's in Rome as Pope Francis was formally installed as the leader of the Roman Catholic Church. The election of Cardinal George Bergoglio as to the papacy was a first in many respects. He is the first pope ever from the Americas, the first from outside Europe in more than a millennium, and the first Jesuit pope. It has been quite a first year for the Pope. His comments and his writings have made headlines around the world. He has downplayed social issues like homosexuality, abortion, and contraception, while emphasizing care for the poor and denouncing the widening gap between the rich and the poor. Conservative Catholics are skeptical. Progressive Catholics are optimistic, but looking for more than words. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. And today we're going to discuss the first year of Pope Francis. And joining us to discuss his first year is Leo Madden. He's Associate Professor of Theology and Head of the Department of Theology at Ohio Dominican University. Leo, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
And Joanne Viviano, Faith and Values reporter at the Columbus Dispatch. Joanne, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Leo, we'll start with you. We've heard about the Francis effect. That's the thinking is that Pope Francis has energized lapsed Catholics, has led to an increase in attendance at Sunday Mass. Have you seen this Francis effect here in Central Ohio?
I have on a personal basis and in conversations with some of my colleagues at Ohio Dominican University and some of my other friends. They are fascinated immediately by his outreach, his joy, his embrace, physical embrace of people of all backgrounds, of all forms of poverty, sadness, pain, and especially the friends of mine who are not Catholics, they talk to me and they say, "There's something there. I'm not quite sure what, but I need to look further." So that the Francis effect, in my experience, has been people who would otherwise not think about the Catholic Church, or they would only think about the Catholic Church in a negative sense, are suddenly have their antennae perked up, and they are wondering, what is this person? What is this faith that would provoke an individual like like Jorge Bergoglio to be so full of joy and to embrace people who are otherwise on the margins?
Whenever a new pope is, elected by the cardinals and then installed, there's always this great, anticipation, the white smoke, a lot of news coverage, the pageantry of the installation of a new pope always energizes Catholics and brings attention to the Catholic Church, generally in a positive light. How is this different than, say, when John Paul II was elected and installed and Pope Benedict was elected and installed? Is this different than just an average pope ascendancy?
I think the number one thing is the message that Pope Francis has said over and over again. We have to first look to the person. With John Paul II, there was an immediate attention given to geopolitics.
Yeah, he was Polish. That was
the
big
surprise.
He was
Polish, Eastern Europe. We were in the Cold War. We didn't know that the Cold War was soon to end, or 10 years later. We didn't know that he would energize so many millions of people in his visits to Poland and elsewhere. But still, there was a geopolitical component to it. With Benedict, the first thought was this is a continuation, right? Maybe at a continuation of a focus more on intellectual rather than spiritual or mystical elements. But with Pope Francis, the emphasis has been immediately on the person. And we have to first look to the person, he says over and over again. And the concern to the person extends to matters of or influences the way we think about economics, the way we think about justice, the way we think about sexual morality even.
292-8513 is our phone number. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We want to hear from you, particularly want to hear from Catholics. Are you a devout practicing Catholic? What do you think of the new pope? Are you an occasional cafeteria Catholic, a C&E Catholic, a Christmas and Easter Catholic? What do you think of the new pope? Our phone number, 292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joanne Viviano, you talk to Catholics on a street level. You talk to priests. You talk to the bishop and his staff. What is the Francis effect on a ground level here in Central Ohio?
Well, I think it's having an effect to some lapsed Catholics, as you had said. I spoke to some folks who maybe hadn't been attending church regularly. One gentleman I spoke with has since become confirmed in the Catholic faith. His children have been baptized. And he attributes a lot of this to the Pope and saying that he just feels his humility and his way he treats people just kind of out there on the street really has affected him. Another gentleman, same thing. He kind of was not real happy with the church, had been away for several years, and has come back now into a program that's sort of for lapsed Catholics here at the Newman Center here. Mm-hmm. And so he has been sort of given a little bit of hope that maybe he can you know, return to the church and feel accepted again. So I've seen that. I've also seen folks who are already very active in the church who are just re-energized. They want to do what the Pope is asking them to do, to give back, to go out to the street and help their neighbor, help the poor, help the people on the margins. And so they really feel this new energy, this new feeling of just wanting to continue what they're doing.
Are priests seeing an increase in mass attendance? Are they seeing an increase at and then when they pass the basket, are they seeing an increase in donations?
Well, there have been some surveys done, and apparently there has not been much increase in mass attendance or volunteering at church. But I did see one study where they say that there has been some increase in donations. So these are national mm-hmm. studies, not local. But so there is a little bit there. You know, they're not really necessarily translating to people in the pews, but they are seeing people maybe reaching deeper in their pockets to give to the poor.
Leo Madden from Ohio Dominican, are you seeing an increase in applications to our Catholic school or no?
Not to my knowledge, but
encourage. It's a little much to ask, I guess, from a new pope.
Yeah. There is this that the effect of Pope Francis is the following, that Pope Francis knows, and people, there is a buzzword or an emphasis now in the Catholic Church on evangelization, how to communicate the great good news of the gospel that we are saved through God entering human history in Jesus. How do we communicate that to people? And Pope Francis, in his entire life, has realized you first have to embrace the person. You can't start out by teaching. You can't start out by telling people no. You have to first start out by telling people yes. And this is I think this will have an effect over time, where people see that the message of Christianity is a positive message, not a list of what you can't do.
292-8513 is the number to call. AllSides@WOSU.org is our email address. You know, why is this such a novel idea that we should care for the poor, that we should give back, that we should serve the needy? Why is this suddenly a new thing for Catholics?
I'll jump in on that one. I must say that in the media coverage of Pope Francis, I am a bit disturbed and sometimes angry that the emphasis has been so much on the public gestures of Pope Francis and his embrace of the poor and expression. This has not been anything all that novel in the coming from Pope Francis. In fact, in the public audiences that the Pope has every Wednesday, Pope John Paul II did that routinely. Pope Benedict XVI did that routinely. But suddenly, Pope Francis, with all praise I can muster, does the same. Now suddenly the media stands up. I find that I have my suspicions about why there is this.
Jerry, why do you think that is? I mean, is it because of the symbolism? He's living in a modest guest house instead of the palatial papal apartments. He dresses more subtly than the Pope, certainly Pope Benedict did. Why do you think the attention of the media and the public is drawn to that?
I think the humility has a lot to do with it. Folks I've talked to have really commented on his humility. And I also think that the media is sort of recognizing how popular he is. And so they're paying maybe closer attention to those types of things. You know, he was on the cover of Rolling Stone. He was Time's Man of the Year. And he's also, there was some graffiti that showed him as a superhero. So he's kind of really just popular among the people. And I think maybe the media is is a, noticing that and focusing on that.
How about more traditional, more conservative Catholics? How are they taking this new pope, Joanne?
I think there are some concerns that maybe he's not conservative enough in certain areas, some of the things he said. But also some of the things he said, he's not really, from what I understand, and Dr. Mann can correct me if I'm wrong, but he's not really changing church doctrine, any real beliefs of the church, but he's sort of putting maybe a better face on the church, focusing more on different things instead of, you know, the rules.
The saying, that's what you pointed to, instead of saying no all the time. And that's, I mean, being Catholic myself, it's, you know, the guilt and everything else, and no, you can't do this, you can't do that, can't have meat on Fridays during Lent. So we're emphasizing that less. And how are the older Catholics viewing that, in your opinion?
I think the concern that many conservative Catholics are having, and you can count me among them in some respects, is this pope seems to be comfortable speaking off the cuff, ad lib, right? Almost every day, in the Casa Santa Marta, where he resides, he gives a homily, and it's not a prepared text. He speaks from the heart, and then the Vatican press office afterwards has to scramble to sort of clarify what it is that the Pope said in his homily.
Kind of like Governor John Kasich.
Could be. I made a joke among my colleagues that for a while, the Francis effect will mean that the church no longer communicates a teaching by way of encyclical. The Pope will just go out and give a press conference on an airplane or a press conference with a few journalists. Conservative Catholics are more comfortable with a formal statement being issued, which is clear and doesn't need to be clarified after the fact. I think that's one area that has left a number of Catholics uncomfortable.
We're talking about the first year of Pope Francis here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann. So the Pope has set this sort of attitude, a new attitude, or maybe a renewed attitude for the Catholic Church. Is that getting down to the parish priest? Are we hearing the same message in the Sunday sermons? Joanne, have you seen that or heard about that?
I think so. But I think, as the bishop had told me, it's sort of a continuation of what they've always been doing. He says, you know, it's not new for the priests to go out into neighborhoods, go out and be with people. It's not new for churches to support St. Vincent de Paul and you know, feed the poor. So I think that, yeah, that's happening, but I'm not so sure that it's necessarily a new thing. But I think maybe it is sort of that re-energizing, like, yeah, you know, we've been right all along, you know, the validating that what we've been saying is what we're supposed to be doing.
I think the criticism always was that the priests spend too much time talking about abortion and contraception and the evils of homosexuality in too many sermons. Are we hearing less of that now because of this pope?
Mr. Thompson, I have to take issue with that. I've been a regular Mass. I've attended Mass frequently, daily, Sunday, for years and years. I have never heard a priest speak about abortion, contraception, homosexual, same-sex marriage in a homily.
We must go to a different church.
Okay. It's possible. It's very possible. One change that this pope has done in regard to the clergy is that he has sent a number of messages, subtle and not so subtle, that gone are the days of the moving up the career ladder among the clergy. He has canceled the honorific title of Monsignor. He's sent the message that for matters of who will be appointed bishops and so forth, that both around the world and especially in the Vatican Curia, gone are the days where someone could see this as a movement up the ladder of prestige. And this is for those for whom this was a concern, this is something that's been very uncomfortable to take in.
We'll dig deeper into the Pope's attitudes towards social issues, including homosexuality, when All Sides with Ann Fisher continues here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about the first year of Pope Francis, the leader of the world's Catholic Church. With us is Dr. Leo Madden from Ohio Dominican University and Joanne Viviano from the Columbus Dispatch. And joining us now by phone from Washington, D.C., is Michael Sean Winters. He's a blogger and columnist for the National Catholic Reporter. Michael, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Good to be with you all.
The Pope raised some eyebrows last summer when he made some comments about gay priests.
Pope Francis appears to be signaling a shift in tone, if not church policy, toward gays. In a wide-ranging in-flight news conference, Francis said he won't judge gay priests.
Con una persona così.
Returning from his first papal trip to Brazil, the pontiff said, "If someone is gay and searches for the Lord, who am I to judge?"
That's a report about Pope Francis's remarks about gay priests. Michael Sean Winters, what that was like the first big thing that he said. I mean, he had some other symbolic things, washing the feet of prisoners and things like that. But that was the first thing that he said that raised eyebrows, correct?
Well, I think one of them certainly his call for a poor church for the poor raised a different set of eyebrows. I thought what was interesting about that comment he made, and he just reiterated it actually last week in a sermon on this, who am I to judge? Everyone immediately focused on the fact that he was talking about this gay Monsignor in the Vatican. But what he was really talking about, I think, was what it means to be a pastor and talking about what it means to be a spiritual leader. Yes, he happened to have been talking in that instance about a gay person, but he could have been speaking about anyone, really. What he was saying is a pastor should be accompanying people, mindful that they are all sinners, that the pastor himself is a sinner, and that judgment is reserved to God, and that judgmentalism is one way to immediately break down that bond between a pastor and the flock. And so while everybody focused on, oh, my God, he's talking about gays, what was really interesting was what he was saying about it, what it means to be a pastor.
But the practice, I think, among at least in the eyes of many Catholics, was that we were judging homosexuals. We were judging gay priests and gay members of the church. Humans were.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there is this old tired phrase of, you know, love the sinner but hate the sin. And unfortunately, in an issue like homosexuality or any area of sexuality, the judgment of the act falls on the person. It just does. And so I think the church is desperately looking for a language with which to talk about homosexuality. I think there's a recognition that our theology is inadequate at present. You know, the church does not move quickly. And, you know, I can remember, I think it was 1973 that homosexuality was removed from the American Psychological Association's lists of disabilities. So, you know, since 1970, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket in terms of the church's understanding of time. But I think they're grappling with this. I suspect the issue will come up at the Synod this coming autumn about the family. And the Pope has given some indications that on issues like civil unions, perhaps gay adoptions, the Church has to revisit these.
292-8513 is our phone number. Our email address is allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the first year of Pope Francis. Michael Sean Winters, a blogger and columnist for the National Catholic Reporter, is on the line from Washington, D.C. Michael, you cover the Church on a national basis. What have you seen of this so-called Francis effect in your discussions with folks from the church around the country?
I would say there are two broad phenomena. One is the most obvious and large phenomenon, which is people are enthusiastic. People feel good about being Catholic again. People want the church to succeed. And so they find in this man somebody who is preaching the gospel, doing it in such an accessible way, is doing it not just with his words, but by these highly symbolic gestures. And I don't want to suggest that a gesture is like a PR ploy. I think this is who the man is. He didn't want to live in the palace. He wanted to live among other people. He's not comfortable in a limo. He doesn't want the fancy red shoes and some of the, grandma's 90s quality lace vestments. There's a simplicity there. I think this tells us something about him. It tells us something about us, which is I think people are still very, very hungry for the gospel. That's by far the vast majority of response. That said, there has been resistance, and I think you find this with certain American bishops. There was an interview on EWTN, which is a conservative Catholic channel, with Bishop Morlino of Madison, Wisconsin, where he was very grudging and condescending toward the Pope. One of the memes that was floated last year that I think is probably most appropriate came from C.J. Reed at St. Thomas University in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he said that there is a group of bishops and priests and some lay people who are reacting like the older son in the story of the prodigal, that they, for 35 years they've been taught, you know, what it means to be a Catholic is to, you know, check these boxes, to oppose, you know, candidates who support abortion rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden this Pope comes along and says, you know, what are we doing for the poor? Do not be obsessed on abortion and same-sex marriage, contraception. And they're responding very much like that older son in The Prodigal, with a certain amount of indignation, who the hell is he to come in and tell us, you know, and question us. We've been good, loyal Catholics. I have a sympathy for some of those people who, you know, have been playing by one set of rules, and all of a sudden there's been a reset. I don't have a lot of sympathy for the bishops and ecclesial leaders who fall into that.
Joanne Viviano from the Columbus Dispatch, you cover faith and values for the newspaper. You've talked to our bishop, Frederick Campbell, about the new pope. What is his – he's a conservative guy. What is his attitude towards Pope Francis?
I think he appreciates what the Pope is saying, and again, he is encouraged that the Pope is saying, you know, what – is happening out there, you know, serving the poor is what you're supposed to be doing. So I think he's encouraged by that. And also he sees younger people being a little bit more involved with this Pope. In particular, pointed to a Bible study that they started at the cathedral downtown and said that there's been quite a bit of folks attending that. So I think that he feels like the Pope is speaking to what the church is already doing, and also to younger people.
This gets to my earlier question, is if Pope Francis's new attitude has drifted down to the priests and to the bishops. It's been a tough year and a half for the Catholic diocese here in Columbus, namely the firing of Carla Hale, the phys ed teacher at Bishop Watterson High School, who was fired or asked to resign, forced out after admitting that she had a longtime same-sex partner, live-in partner. Would that have happened? That happened before Pope Francis, I believe, was installed. Would that have happened, do you think, after had the Pope been installed?
It's still happening around the country. You still see these types of things happening. Schools, other folks who work for diocese across the country. So I'm not sure that it would not have happened. I think the bishop feels that he is, it's his responsibility to uphold what the church believes, and that he acted on that.
Theo Madden.
I just want to reinforce something that Ms. Viviano said in regard to the young people, that it had started already, in my experience at Ohio Dominican, it started already under the previous popes, and it continues now, that there are Catholic students at Ohio Dominican who embrace the care for the poor in an extraordinary way, and there are there's no small number of them who look forward to entering the seminary or to enter religious life. And they are very much inspired by Pope Francis's example.
Let's go to the phones. We have some folks waiting. We're talking about Pope Francis's first year here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Mike from Columbus, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a practicing Catholic and one people would probably call a liberal Catholic. I and many people of my mind are just ecstatic about Pope Francis. We see him as being one who emphasizes not just ritual, and we like our ritual, it has its place, but that that's secondary. What's important is how we live our lives. And an emphasis away from the thou shalt nots, but toward the thou shalt. Live your life with joy, live it with love, live it to help one another, and don't get all obsessed on don't do this, don't do that, make sure you cross yourself with holy water, whatever. That stuff has its place, but it's secondary to how you actually live your life.
Mike, let me ask you a question. Why was that not present with previous popes? What you're saying is kind of at the basis of faith and religion. Why was that attitude not present with previous popes?
Well, it's interesting. I heard one of your speakers a few minutes ago upset that he felt that the media wasn't picking up on that somehow. And he may have a point. I don't know. But somehow the message just did not come across that way. It came across, I don't know, I just always felt from the last two there was much more of the thou shalt not, and not live like this, live with joy. I didn't pick that up from them. I can't tell you why. And I don't think it was just the media. I think it was also the messenger.
All right, thank
rather
you.
The person giving the message, the two popes.
Thank you for your call. Michael Sean Wiggins from the National Catholic Reporter. Is that the similar attitude you're hearing from? He called it, Mike from Columbus called himself a liberal or a progressive Catholic. They're energized around the country as well?
There's no unanimity. I think you have, a vast majority who are thrilled, and I somewhat fault the Catholic left. It turns out Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II had wonderful things to say about the poor. But the Catholic left kind of allowed the interpretation of those two popes to be completely corralled by conservative Catholics. And so I always make the point, there is deep continuity between Francis and Benedict and Francis and John Paul II. What there is not is continuity between Francis and Benedict and John Paul II as they were interpreted by certain American conservative Catholics who would always reduce it to a kind of political agenda. And so I think, certainly I think that most liberal Catholics who care primarily about social justice issues are thrilled with this pope. There is, again, a small group that are asking, why isn't he ordaining women, and why isn't he allowing same-sex marriage? And these are just, a sliver, but they are there. They are looking for more reform than I think he is intending on delivering.
Leo Madden from Ohio Dominican University. Come on, it's been a year. We should have women priests by now. Is there an impatience there, unrealistic impatience?
Absolutely, because the Pope, though he has a certain, role to play in the Catholic Church, he has a complete and universal authority over the Catholic Church. Nevertheless, there is such a thing as the living teaching office of the Church and the living tradition of the Church, and the individual Pope simply cannot stand athwart, right, the wave of the living tradition of the Church
and
say no.
If he is the supreme commander, for lack of a better term, yeah, why can't he?
Because he knows that as the individual who sits on the See of Peter, as the individual who is fundamentally responsible for maintaining the unity of the faith and for maintaining the continuity of the faith that comes to us from the apostles. Right, and therefore if he sees his role in any way, it is a task of preserving the gospel from harm. Right now, his emphasis, and this is his personality, his emphasis is on being the first pastor of the Church. He sees the world as his individual parish, mm-hmm. and what Mr. Winters said previously is absolutely correct. He first looks at the pastoral responsibility. And that this will, over time, make its way down to the individual parishes.
Joanne Viviano from the Columbus Dispatch, do you hear that impatience that, we've heard a lot of good things, but there really hasn't been, it's only been a year, but there really hasn't been any fundamental changes in really any of the Church's practices?
Sure. I do hear that. I hear concern from folks who have left the Catholic Church and say, we just don't see that this is going to translate into any real change. And also there's a little bit of concern that among people who are hopeful that there will be change, that he won't have time to do it. He's 77 years old. How long is he going to be there to affect change? And change happens slowly in the Catholic Church. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. So I think there is that concern.
Michael Sean Winters from the National Catholic Reporter. I mean, is there a possibility we could see some major change in this papacy? I'm thinking, you know, priests being allowed to marry, the women priests. I mean, that would be a major shift. Is there any chance that could happen in this papacy?
No, is the short answer. I think those are very different issues insofar as celibacy is a discipline, and the Church has taught that reserving the priesthood to men has a greater doctrinal sensibility. The Church moves very, not just slowly, but it has to move together. And you have watched in the past few years issues like same-sex issues really divide the Anglican communion, which is also a worldwide communion, and the more conservative African and Latin American branches have been horrified that the Episcopal Church in the U.S. Is ordaining openly gay bishops. The Pope is not going to let that happen to our Church. But I think at a deeper level, he's inviting all of us as Catholics not to be simply divided by these neuralgic issues. But I think there's a kind of chastising that we in the West really need, which is when your brothers and sisters are starving to death, why are you fighting about power relationships in the Vatican? Why are you concerned about these neuralgic sexual issues? Let's put the focus where Jesus put the focus.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the phones real quick here. Marie, you're on All Sides with Ann Fisher with a panel of experts. We're talking about Pope Francis's first year. Go ahead, Marie.
Thank you for taking my call. Joanne, you and I know each other because I'm one of the folks that helped form the prayer bird vigil for the Leadership Conference of Women Religious a couple of years ago. I think the women in the Church are part of the justice issue. I don't think they're separate issues. And as a former member of a religious community, a lifelong Catholic, a prepared lay minister, it's not a matter of power. And I get so uncomfortable every time it's framed that way. It's a matter of call of the individual and service to the community. We talk about people who are poor and who are needing ministry. Women are the ones who are there, whether they be Catholic sisters or whether they be moms who can stay at home with their kids and can help out with things during the day. The vast majority of people working with the poor are women.
So what would you like to see this Pope do?
Well, the issue is, again, one of justice. And I think the more he knows of what women do and sees the way that we minister, which is not in a powerful way, but in a service way, by and large, there are, of course, always exceptions, then he'll return to the very early tradition of the Church, which includes women. And there is a lot of archaeological evidence.
Includes women as how? As what?
As ministers, as primary ministers. Mm-hmm. And, they didn't call it priesthood in the first three centuries. Nobody did. But the fact is women were in those roles.
Okay. Let's get some take on this. Michael Sean Winters, what do you make of that?
Well, I agree with her that, these issues of ordination should not be primarily seen in terms of power. Unfortunately, many of the advocates of women's ordination do that as the first thing out of their mouth. I do think you will look to this Pope to be reaching out to lay people, men and women, beyond the boundaries of the clergy for a variety of roles in this Church in a way that probably didn't happen under previous pontificates. I'm somewhat ambivalent about that because my worry is that, which lay people is he going to choose? There are plenty of conservative lay Catholics who don't hear confessions every week, and I think can be very doctrinaire and very very allergic to the idea of mercy. So I don't think that necessarily will solve anything. But I do think this pope will see, will have a real sense at how he handles the doctrinal investigation of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious in this country, which was, you know, one of the signs in, under Benedict's tenure of this kind of thou shalt not attitude. And we'll see how that plays out. My sense is it will just go away very quietly.
We're talking about Pope Francis's first year as Pope, as leader of the Roman Catholic Church around the world. We'll continue our discussion. We'll look at the, how the new Pope might handle the ongoing sex abuse scandal that has rocked the Church when All Sides with Ann Fisher continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're looking back on the first year of Pope Francis. Today is the one-year anniversary of him being inaugurated as Pope. And we're looking back at what changes he has made, what new attitudes he has brought to the Catholic Church with a panel of experts. Leo Madden is from the Ohio Dominican University. Joanne Viviano writes about religion for the Columbus Dispatch, and Michael Sean Winters is a blogger and columnist for the National Catholic Reporter. Let's turn to the sex abuse scandal, which has dogged the Church now for, you know, certainly in the public's eye for a couple of decades. Pope Francis raised eyebrows, in a different set of eyebrows, when he told an Italian newspaper recently, when talking about, asked about the sex scandal, he said, "The Catholic Church is perhaps the only public institution to have acted with transparency and responsibility. No one else has done more. Yet the Church is the only one to have been attacked." Michael Sean Winters, how did that resonate with folks here in the U.S.?
Well, I think the remarks were unfortunate. It was an uncharacteristically defensive comment from this pope. I'm not familiar with how extensively he, you know, had to grapple with this issue in Argentina, or the effect that the issue had there. He had announced in December that they're forming a new commission to deal with this issue in the Vatican. It has hit some snags because one of the missing pieces of the puzzle that he wants this commission to deal with is specifically dealing with bishops who do not follow their own rules. So you have a bishop in Kansas City, St. Joseph, Missouri, who was convicted in state court of child endangerment, and yet he is still the bishop. He could not be hired tomorrow as a Sunday school teacher because he would fail the background check, which is required by the norms that the bishops have adopted, yet he's still the bishop. And there's currently no mechanism for holding him accountable within the Church. This commission will fill that very clear need. But as you can imagine, when you start talking about a group that's going to be charged with recommending to the Pope that bishops be removed, all sorts of jurisdictional fights broke out. But I'm told that this commission will be announced shortly. And after that, I would look for him to have a meeting with victims. It's not clear to me from those comments that he understands, and I hope some American bishops will lead him to understand that if the Church doesn't get this right, nothing else we say matters. Because if we continue to endanger children, and I agree the Church has made great strides, but if there's no accountability for those who do not make those strides and continue to backslide, then quite rightly the people of God will not listen to bishops.
Leo Madden from Ohio Dominican University. Here's another quote. Now, the Pope certainly was very condemning of this problem. He did not take in this interview with his newspaper. But one other quote was, he says, "The statistics on the phenomenon of violence against children are shocking. But they also clearly show that the great majority of abuses are carried out in the family or neighborhood environments." It sounds to me that he's passing the buck to the local folks. Why can't the Vatican just say, once and for all, this is wrong, we're not going to have any tolerance for it?
What it surprises me in regard to this issue in Francis is that he's shown himself to be so adept and so sensitive to other individuals who are hurting, who are on the margins, and in this issue, I just don't see it. And I whether it's a matter of his people close to him haven't brought it to his attention enough, this must be the case. I think that it will be. I trust that it will be rectified in the next few months when people say, "Look, this quote that you gave to the Milan newspaper simply has not is certainly is not enough," and so he'll make a public gesture of. And which would be genuine, you know, not just a gesture.
Joanne Viviano, this is, especially among non-Catholics, this is the cloud that hangs over the church. It's the first thing, or if not the first thing, maybe the second thing they think of when they think of the Catholic Church right now, like it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for a lot of Catholics who've left the church, it's an issue as well. And they don't feel that it's been handled appropriately. And the advocates, the comment that you refer to, advocates pounced on it, and they feel like they say they don't have hope for change when they hear something like that.
292-8513. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Patty, you're on the air talking about Pope Francis. Go ahead, Patty.
Yes, this very issue is one that has caused me to actually leave the church. Predominantly for what you're talking about, it's a failure of the church to meet the issue head on. We've passed priests up and down the I-75 corridor, decimating our churches. First of all, with the actual abuse itself, and then our failure to actually deal with the problem, and then to have our Pope make the comments that he makes, first for Benedict to not address the problem, and now for Pope Francis to make these comments, it's almost glib, in the sense of, oh, they're there.
Let's get some reaction. Let's get some reaction here, Patty. We got the idea, Patty. Thanks for the call. Michael Sean Winters from the National Catholic Reporter. To be clear, Benedict did apologize for the abuse that occurred in the Catholic Church. And I forget the number, but there were hundreds of priests that were defrocked during his tenure as pope, correct?
Thousands.
And
I think this pope, let's be clear. This was an area where John Paul II utterly failed the church, both in failing to come up with a mechanism for dealing with this and in continuing to shower attention and patronage on people who we now know were truly sick individuals, like Father Maciel, the head of the Legionnaires. I think Benedict took great strides to begin to address this and made some real progress. But as we know, his pontificate was not particularly effective at a variety of levels and became consumed by these internal squabbles. I think it is much more important that the Pope get this right than that he get it quick.
Do you see a zero-tolerance policy coming out of this committee, this commission that's doing its work?
The zero-tolerance policy is already the law of the Church. I mean, that's, what's so frustrating. The problem is that if a bishop does not enforce the policy, there's no mechanism for reprimanding that bishop. And I think that has been the missing part of the puzzle. And I'm deeply worried that we have younger bishops in this country who were not here in 2001, 2002 when the scandal really exploded. And they are backsliding, and they think, oh, that was just all the media and hype. And, and they're not being as vigilant as the issue requires. And I suspect within a matter of weeks, as this commission is named and as their jurisdiction and authority is made known to actually hold bishops accountable, I think you will see a changed attitude. And I think the Pope, this is clearly a Pope who is capable of understanding the damage that has been done to these victims and subsequently to the Church. I just think, we have to remember this is a guy who a year ago was plucked out of Buenos Aires, thrown into this job, had never lived in Rome, had never worked in the Curia, didn't know where the bathrooms were, has been dealing with the finances in the face of enormous resistance, is dealing with this in the face of enormous resistance. And I think he's clearly not somebody who's going to step aside because he's not up to the fight. But I think it's a very complicated issue. And I suspect this time next year, for all in this show, we will not be reflecting on what were, I think, correctly perceived as insensitive remarks.
Leo Madden, the beatification of Pope John Paul is coming up, along with John the 23rd. This issue will come up again. And then after that, do you expect a change in policy before or after this beatification? It's only a month away, I guess, for John
A change
Paul.
In policy regarding...
Regarding our new statements regarding the sex abuse scandal and things like that.
Yeah, I hope that Mr. Winter said is true, that if we were to meet a year from now, we will see progress and some healing occurring around the world. Since we're here in the American context, we should be grateful in one respect that the rules are in place in the United States, and the rules of transparency, at least at the parish level, in regard to all volunteering and the preparation of priests, I hope, takes this seriously into account. The damage has been done. The damage is far worse, though, in other parts of the world, especially in Ireland. And I think we're three or four generations away from any healing happening there.
All right. We're speaking about the first year of Pope Francis as the leader of the Roman Catholic Church. Joanne Viviano from the Dispatch, email from Nick, who's listening. He wants to know what the Pope Francis effect is on seminarians, new priests. There is a priest shortage. Is he bringing in new folks who want to be priests or religious?
Well, according to the bishop, yes. The numbers of people at least inquiring about vocations has gone up. I'm not certain that it's just within the past year. I think it's something that's been going on for a little bit longer than that. But there is some increased interest.
Let's go back to the phones. And Paul, you're on the air here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Go ahead, Paul. Hi, Paul. You there?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a non-Catholic, but I follow Pope Francis like a bloodhound. I think this brother, no offense taken by the terminology, has got it. He knows that it's about people. I wish more people within the evangelical community, be they Lutheran, Baptist, Methodist, whatever, would understand what he's talking about. He's separating the wheat from the chaff, and I tell you something. The Catholics may claim this Pope as a spiritual leader, but don't you ever think that the Protestant community isn't just as enthusiastic with this Pope as Catholics are, probably.
All right. Thanks for the call, Paul. Leo Madden, I mean, much of what the Pope is talking about, you're hearing political campaigns, the widening gap between rich and poor, and taking care of the least fortunate among us. And that's what Paul was referring to. He, as a non-Catholic, was tapping into this.
Exactly. My worry is, however, that Pope Francis will be corralled into a political debate, especially if rumors work out that he visits the United States in the next couple of years. One last thing in regard to the Pope, and in response to what the caller just said. This Pope has referred to a number of texts of the Gospels, but one that he's referred to many times is the final judgment, where the human race is divided into sheep and the goats, and the sheep are welcomed into the joy of heaven because of what they do. And they say, well, when did we ever see you? When did we know that we did it because of you, O Lord? And they said, it doesn't matter if you know it, that it's explicitly done for the sake of any particular religion. If you just do it, feeding the poor, visiting the sick, visiting the imprisoned, that is the standard for eternal life.
Michael Sean Winters, just about a minute left. How long will this honeymoon last for the Pope Francis?
I don't see it going away anytime soon, because I think this is a man who's 77 and knows his own mind and has habits of the heart that are compelling because they are so countercultural. We live in a world of phonies and celebrity, and he is authentic. We live in a world that's drowning in materialistic consumerism, and he lives simply.
Joanne Viviano, real quick, I'm from the Columbus side. How do you see this Pope over the honeymoon? Is it lasting here in Central Ohio?
I think so. Some folks just feel like energized to talk more about their Catholicism to other people.
All right. Thanks very much to Joanne Viviano from the Columbus Dispatch, Leo Madden from Ohio Dominican University, and Michael Sean Winters from the National Catholic Reporter. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR News station.